It's Mail It In Friday.
The plant called and said if you don't come in tomorrow, don't bother coming in Monday.
Woohoo! 4-day weekend.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Two of Overdrive on TSN 1050, also up on the TSN app and on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes. Brian's back on Monday, and I'm joined for the second day in a row with Dave Poole, and Bob McKenzie's going to join us in a couple of minutes.
How much did that first hour fly by on a Fired Up Friday?
You said like, it,
that
buddy.
Took about 3 minutes.
Time flies when you're having fun.
That first hour took about 3 minutes, seriously.
Well, we got a lot to get to, right? Like we
do have a lot going on. It's great.
Hammered a lot of baseball in the first
big
hour.
Big subject and the big guy's coming up right now.
Right, like Bob McKenzie. Maybe he's coming on our show to break some news. Yesterday, he broke some news. He let us know which teams are staying in which hotels. Probably didn't think he was going to cap his career doing that, but hey, here we are. Hotel X, Royal York, Sutton Place, JW Marriott, he's all over it.
It was really funny that a lot of people interpreted Hotel X as a placeholder hotel.
Right, right.
Or something else,
but anyways.
Well, because of the scenario with the draft and the fact that a lettered
right.
team had
that's,
won
that's
the first
point.
Overall pick in the draft, when they saw Hotel X, they naturally thought that the league just wasn't disclosing it, that there was a placeholder hotel that was to be named later, not that there was a hotel called Hotel X, which obviously there is.
Yeah. So it's funny that we day by day, we get a little bit more of kind of peeling the onion of what these hubs will look like. And Hotel X being an exhibition place, are they just going to have kind of a run of the exhibition place? Are they going to maybe bring some of the Midway? You know,
the X is closed this year, right?
Yeah.
There's no X, so they won't have that all fired up.
But, right.
You know,
Tiny
the
Tom's
one thing
Donuts?
You would say is, boy, you better have those. And you also better have unbelievable internet wherever you are. Like whatever bandwidth you have in those areas.
Right.
You know, we think about when the pandemic first started and you went on the internet at home at 5 o'clock at night. 8 o'clock at night, you couldn't get on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's high-rise buildings near me down by the lake, and every single light would be on in every apartment.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's home. Not everybody's ever been home at 8 o'clock at night and trying to get on the internet. And so, if you're going to keep those guys happy, you better have major league bandwidth in each of those hub little areas.
That, I'm assuming, has been a theme throughout the pandemic, and I'm thinking of our colleague Steve Simmons, who's really the first human being I've seen in this studio in the last few months, because he's been in doing game day with Aaron Korolnik, and we were just catching up as I was coming in and he was going out, and he said, yeah, my kids are living with me again, and I can just imagine there's a lot of kids who've moved back in with their parents and they're yelling at their parents from the basement, why does the internet suck so much?
No question. Well, you know, I had a buddy and he had four kids that were all at various levels of school and they were all trying to work online. He's trying to work.
Yeah.
He's saying, wait a second, somebody get off the internet. I got to, you know, nothing's happening here.
Wow.
Just an absolute overload. And they better look after that for the players, because in these hubs, they got to keep them happy somehow.
Yes. And as someone whose fiance is a teacher, I've been asked multiple times, how fast is our internet, and is it possible to make it faster?
It's too slow.
And everyone thinks because of being at TSN, you have, you know, like you have Bell on speed dial, and you can just call up Bell and be like, hey, I need my internet a little faster. Can we get on that? They don't.
Well, you could do that.
No, I was going to say, maybe guys like you, Dave. Or
you couldn't
Bob.
Even keep the lights on in your studio
that
yesterday, and you're in the studio.
Yeah, that is true. You would think that I would have the nicer of the two studios, but Casa Dave over there, that's the real deal. You can actually keep
faux
the lights
flex.
On.
Faux flex, as Duffy calls
right.
it, my faux flex studio.
Do you ever change the books around?
Nope.
No, it's
nope.
always the same?
That's it. That's my books.
So I'm wondering.
On that part of the shelf.
That is.
Like I have a magnificent book collection, which a lot of right now between, you know, my last two homes is in boxes and waiting for the ultimate library. But I have a couple thousand books, and I have a lot of first editions, and I have, you know, I have them stamped, and I have a really cool book collection, particularly cool sports book collection, which wouldn't surprise you, but all different sports and all different types of biographies and autobiographies and, you know, just some really, really cool stuff. All to be unpacked at some time in my future.
Okay. How many books written by Bob McKenzie?
I have a couple of those. Okay. I have a couple of those. And they're signed.
Ooh.
By Bob McKenzie.
You know, we don't have him on the line yet. You can probably sell those and make some money, and he wouldn't even know it. Right? Like, you don't even have to bring it up on the panel with him.
I do have a number of signed books and some pretty cool ones. I had an opportunity to meet John Grisham at a baseball dinner, actually, one night and chatted with him at length. But I have some pretty cool first edition signed by guys like Grisham and you know, sort of not even really meant to collect them, but bumped into guys at the right time and the right place. And I do have a Bob McKenzie signed book.
Grisham and McKenzie. That's kind of like the same
person. In the same sentence.
And speaking of which, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is the one and only Bob McKenzie. Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? I wouldn't know if I'd mention McKenzie in the same breath as Grisham, to be honest.
Yeah, your books
are
better.
Yeah, well, he's fiction.
Your books are better.
Yeah, so am I.
Challenging your genre.
Well, you'll be happy to know that Dave advertised that he has a lot of your books signed, and he hasn't sold them for cash yet. So
yeah, that's because they're not worth anything.
Not yet.
Not yet is the key word. Speaking of not yet, this deal has not been ratified yet, though. Is yet the key word there?
Yeah, for now, no doubt. You know, the player vote doesn't close until 6 p.m. Eastern time. The Board of Governors call started at 4, and I'm going to presume that it's still ongoing as we speak. So, you know, I mean, I'm not in the prediction business, but there's part of me that would be really surprised if this doesn't get ratified. And yet I don't want to create the impression that, you know, it's all, you know, kumbaya and love and everybody loves everything about it. There's nothing to love about what's happened to the economics of the game if you're an NHL owner or if you're an NHL player. And, you know, the revenue of hockey has taken an enormous hit. And coming back for 1920 will repair a little bit of the damage. But let's be honest, there's every reason to believe this damage could continue well into 2021, that it's not even close to being the negative impact of the virus hasn't fully been felt yet. We don't know if there's going to be fans in the stands for 2021, and if there are, we don't know how many or when. And so, you know, the players still are facing a very uncertain future, but, and so are the owners, but, you know, approving this return to play, and more importantly, I think, but it's all linked together, so it's one and the same. But the CBA extension, the four-year CBA extension on top of the 2 years that we've gone along with the transition rules, gives players and owners a six-year runway to repair the damage that's been done and will be done to the economics of the game. And if you don't do that, you know what? And this is why I'm relatively optimistic to a point that it'll get ratified, is because if you don't do that, then we are looking at something so incredibly bleak for the next couple of years in the National Hockey League and for NHL players and owners that I'm not sure either side could deal with it. You know, and again, I don't know the exact numbers, but people have thrown around things like, well, the players are going to lose more than 50 or 60% of their salary in escrow for next season if they don't approve this deal. And the owners are going to have a dramatic decrease in the salary cap to maybe $60 or $65 million. How do teams even manage that? It's not whether NHL general managers could manage it. It's whether what the numbers are the numbers. And if you don't have an accommodation long-term between the owners and the players in the form of a CBA extension, then you're really looking at just letting the market conditions of the economic loss dictate what the salary cap and what the escrow will look like for next season and the year after. And it would seem to be untenable for both the owners and the players. So for that reason, I think they're going to ratify it, but I don't know that. And well, maybe we'll know in the next hour or two.
Bob, at a very different time, I was on the labor calls for players, and there were always players with big voices. And you know, they would bring up their own personal situation or one that they felt represented a group of players. And I'm sure those players are making noise right now. But a couple of weeks back, you had two back-to-back pretty public tweets. The first by Artemi Panarin that was a very professionally, almost legally written tweet that dealt with escrow. And then right back up was Ryan Kesler, you know, who speaks his mind quite freely. And then it quieted after that. And it was almost like those were shots across at some point to see what the temperature was amongst the players. And then it was almost like somebody said, just not the right time for that right now.
Well, I think privately there probably are, you know, I'm sure there's more than Artemi Panarin and Ryan Kesler that don't love what's coming down the pipe. But as I said, nobody's got to love what's coming down the pipe. It's just how are you going to handle it? See, here's the thing. And I think both statements by Panarin and Ryan Kesler, the underlying premise of both, even though they were expressed, as you said, in completely different ways, is that these players don't love the system that the players are in. You know, it's a hard cap. It's a 50-50 split of hockey-related revenue. And so when there is this economic crisis created by the pandemic, you know, the players really bear the brunt of a lot of it. And they are in debt to the owners because of the loss of hockey-related revenue. And that's not to say the owners aren't suffering too. They are. But there's basically the meter is running on what the players owe the owners. And you can, you know, and Ryan Kesler was really blunt about it because Ryan Kesler, along with a number of other players, I think, and Ryan Kessler's agent, Kurt Overhart. I believe Kurt Overhart is one of the agents who so doesn't like the system that currently exists and has existed in one form or another since 2005, that he looks at, Overhart and many of his clients and other players as well, may look at this as, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for us. We've never had more leverage in some respects, even though we've never had more economic loss in the short term. So maybe we should suck it up and go through a horrendous couple of years and then fight to dramatically alter the system so that it's not a hard cap system. Now, the flip side of that is, we know how Gary Bettman and the owners feel about the hard cap system and what they were prepared to do in 04 and 05 to get it. Shut down the season, no problem. Maybe shut down a second season. We don't know. It never got to that because the players couldn't deal with that concept that maybe they would have to go a second full season to avoid getting linkage of a hard cap system. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of other players, though, that say, hey, man, We can't fathom what the next 2 years would look like, and we can't get into that fight to dramatically alter the system right now, and we're better to take the next 6 years to mitigate the damage of the pandemic, and then if we're on more solid footing, then maybe that's when we make our stand and say, okay, you know what, enough's enough, no more hard cap, but that's a battle for another day. So I'm sure there's players that feel both ways, and I guess we'll find out within an hour or two how many more feel one way than the other.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, joining us on Overdrive, as you just alluded to. We could find out about the ratification of this deal before our show is done. You did break a little bit of news yesterday in terms of what the Hub City hotels would be and which teams would be staying at each hotel. And you got quite the reaction on Hotel X in Toronto from those who are outside of Toronto who don't realize Hotel X is actually the hotel's name. That hotel in particular is in Exhibition Place. Is the plan for Exhibition Place to be sort of a hub for players as well?
Yeah, I'm not sure to what extent. It's obviously that hotel. You know, five teams are scheduled to stay at Hotel X. On the exhibition grounds, seven teams in the East are scheduled to stay at the Royal York Hotel. So the Royal York Hotel is a bubble in and of itself. It's basically locked down entirely for NHL use and all its facilities. Same thing with Hotel X. I'm not sure how far beyond Hotel X that extends on the exhibition grounds. There may be other facilities on the exhibition grounds that are part of that. I don't know specifically, but you know, that's certainly the plan. And they divided up the hotels based on merit. So the Hotel X is probably a little newer, nicer facility than the Royal York. So the top five teams in the East, you know, Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, Philadelphia, and the Pittsburgh Penguins get Hotel X. The remaining seven teams, including the Leafs, get the Royal York.
Bob, throughout these negotiations, what did you learn about the state of the league and the relationship that both the league and the NHLPA have with each other?
Well, I think, you know, I would say this, regardless of what happens here with the ratification. And as I say, I'm kind of expecting ratification, but I always allow for any possibility. But I would say this, that, you know, and I got no dog in this fight, no horse in this race, but I've really been quite complimentary to both the NHL and the NHLPA for recognizing that these are extraordinary times and getting down to brass tacks and getting the return to play protocols done and getting a CBA extension done. It would have been very easy for either side to get real ornery and draw lines in the sand and say, we have to have this or we're not going to do a deal. And in relatively short order, under extreme duress, they got it done. And I think an incredible number of people on both sides of the fence, NHL and NHLPA, worked extraordinarily ridiculous hours, you know, literally 24/7 for the better part of weeks, some people getting very little or no sleep to try and put this thing together. Mm-hmm. And I still can't say with certainty, and I don't think anybody can, that we're going to get to phase four and everything's going to be perfect and it's going to all go off without a hitch and they're going to start playing games on August 1st and we're going to award the Stanley Cup in the first week of October and yay, way to go, everybody. Because we've got to get to the bubble first and there are lots of inherent risks with players still in phase two until Monday and in phase three from Monday to the 26th of July that could derail this thing. But I think you got to hand it to the NHL and the NHLPA for doing everything they can to try to make this happen and to do it cooperatively when, you know, in an environment where historically they're not automatically wired to do things cooperatively and do things more adversarially.
Bob, we're almost caught by surprise by pure hockey news when we're so focused on the pandemic and the CBA and ratification, all that. But yesterday, some hockey news did come out with Lindy Ruff being named the head coach of New Jersey Devils and Tommy Fitzgerald, I believe, title vice president and general manager. And so the hockey news that drops in on us, maybe a little unexpected, that Lindy Ruff was employed as an assistant coach with the Rangers, who are still involved. But had you heard that that was looming there, or did that just catch everybody a little bit by surprise?
Well, we knew that he was a candidate to be the head coach, along with Peter Laviolette, Hélène Nasruddin, the interim head coach, who was the assistant before they made the coaching change of John Hines going, who ultimately ended up in Nashville. So we thought there was a possibility the hiring could take place, but we also thought there was a possibility that that whole coaching search would get shut down because we didn't know for an absolute fact that Tom Fitzgerald was going to lose the interim tag and he was going to get the GM's job full time. Pierre LeBrun reported yesterday that the New Jersey Devil ownership group had went pretty far down the road with both former LA King assistant general manager Mike Fiuta and current assistant general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Lawrence Gilman. And we're talking multiple interviews and deep dives on potential employment for them as the general manager. So it was between Fitzgerald, Fiuta, and Gilman. And we thought the coaching thing had been shut down until such time that they made the decision on the GM. Well, obviously what happened is that they made the decision on Tommy Fitzgerald staying and losing the interim tag And once that happened, Tommy Fitzgerald knew that he was predisposed to hire a coach, and he had the choice of Nasruddin or Laviolette or Lindy Ruff. And of the three, Lindy was the one that was maybe the surprise candidate, because after Lindy lost his job in Dallas, we kind of assumed that, you know, maybe he wasn't going to be a head coach again. Maybe it was, you know, going to be assistant coaching for him after having had runs in Buffalo and what have you. And instead, he's the guy. And Tommy Fitzgerald has direct experience with him dating back to their days with the Florida Panthers, which is a long, long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, Tom Fitzgerald thinks that Lindy's the guy to come in and really spearhead a development phase for a very young New Jersey Devil team. So I think it caught us off a little off guard, because we weren't sure what the timing would be on the managerial thing. But once the managerial thing got taken care of with Fitzgerald getting the job, obviously Fitzgerald was in a position to announce the new head coach.
And I'm sure Lindy Ruff is now concerned about what his players will be doing over the next couple of months, because, you know, if you're not in this restart, you're kind of lost in the mix in a way. Is there, and I haven't heard anything recently, but are there still plans for those teams that didn't make the play-in rounds to have some sort of training camp just to get their players on the ice and get them in some sort of organized practice?
I've not heard anything about them being able to do that in phase three. I know that the Devils were amongst, you know, that group of seven teams that would love to have put together, you know, their own phase three. That is, have a camp of some description and get players to it and just try to break up the monotony and that feeling that they're almost shut down and out of business, in a manner of speaking. But I don't believe that's happening anytime soon. And so what teams instead will be looking at, I'm sure, is asking the league if somewhere along the line in the fall, is it possible to put something together to try and, you know, break up that monotony. And also, I mean, all these, hey, there's so many uncertainties here. Is junior hockey going to be around? Even the European leagues that were going to start in September, now we're seeing they've pushed back some of their start dates to November. College hockey doesn't look like it's going to, certainly the Ivy League schools and ostensibly the teams they play with in the ECAC are probably now looking at the earliest at a January 1st start. What do teams do with all their young players? What do they do with their American League players? And will they be able to put anything together in the way of development camps come the fall to try and get these guys back on ice? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows the answer to any of that right now.
Well, before I let you go, let me refresh at TSN Bob McKenzie. No, you didn't tweet anything while we were talking. So no news to report yet, but we always appreciate you coming on the show. And once you can finally report this is done, then hopefully you can really enjoy this weekend.
All righty. Thanks, guys. I hope so. I've got a golf game set up with Pooley on Monday, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay.
Our coordinator set that up.
Yes, he did. Our social coordinator.
Okay. I'm guessing it's not the Quizmaster.
No, definitely not.
He's not invited.
Okay. Take care, awesome. Bob.
Thanks, guys.
There's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Bob McKenzie joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom's open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. He brought up the European leagues, and I know the German league came out either today or yesterday that they're pushing their league back to November. And I guess nothing should surprise me, but with the success of the Bundesliga in Germany, you thought, well, at least parts of Europe are ahead of us, and those leagues will get going, and there'll be some semblance of normalcy when it comes to those leagues and those players.
Yeah, and so many questions. Obviously, Sweden, you know, quite loudly went for the herd mentality, yes, and the herd immunity, and, you know, it didn't work out. It just flat out didn't work out. And,
yeah,
you know, whereas that was going to be an advantage at one point, it, you know, to a country that takes great pride in things like that, it simply didn't. Mm-hmm. And it does appear by all accounts that the Bundesliga and the Premier League are doing a really good job. And the Premier League, I believe we chatted about, had zero positive tests out of their last grouping, 1,900 tests or close to 2,000 tests. So they're doing some things right, and that's life within the bubble. Mm-hmm. But just so many questions about, you know, beyond the NHL teams, what is going to happen to, you know, so you have a reserve list, and that can go up to 90 players, and you have that, and that's a combination of any players that you've drafted, have in your minor league, maybe drafted and still in college, and, you know, you have those lists, and, you know, past the NHL team right now, it's going to be how do you keep those guys in the pipeline of getting better, and so many questions to be answered.
We hope that things can work out where we'll actually get leagues, and, you know, that had us in the mood to talk about what those leagues will look like, specifically to Toronto teams. When we return, Dave's going to take out that little black book that no one's allowed to actually look in because all the secrets to his life are in there, but also somewhere in there is your top five list of Toronto athletes we're looking forward to seeing this summer.
Off board on this one. Way off.
I like that.
Way off.
Okay. We'll do that next, plus Michael Bradley from TFC at 6:05, and also a huge name in baseball saying, I'm out, I'm not playing this season. That and much more. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TV on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes. He'll join alongside Dave Pullen. A reminder, at 6:05, Michael Bradley from TFC will be joining us from the bubble in Orlando. Plus, Brian Folks, who's an MMA writer for The Athletic on UFC Fight Island. A lot of people laughed when they heard about that, Dave, a couple months ago. Dana White found a way to pull it, well, he hasn't pulled it off, I guess, yet, but they've at least...
Now they're getting it done, though. They are getting it done. Another individual sport, but, you know, I looked through all the testing protocol and all the different stages to get a fighter into or onto the island, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they're going through a lot of legwork that other teams and other leagues are going to have to go through, and yes, it's an individual sport, I get that, but they're doing a lot of work to get it done.
Right. So testing will be so important and so integral for the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, MLS. We've already seen, you know, their MLS's back tournament underway. We hope that all these end up and we can get to a finish point or a finish line to the seasons. And in that sort of attitude, it got us thinking, who are the top five athletes, Toronto athletes, we're looking forward to watching this summer? Dave, we've established how much you love lists. You teased us with an outside-the-box kind of list, so I'm intrigued to hear what your list is.
Okay, am I going 5 through 1? Am I going 1 through 5 here?
I don't, we got Balls, no, do you know we what didn't I'm get doing? Any, we didn't get any direction from the producer of this show. So
I would say 1 through 5.
Okay.
I like to build the suspense. So we're going to have a drop-down list here. We submitted our names to Matt.
Right.
Is he on top of this? So
he's okay. On top of it. He knows what he's doing.
Okay, so the number one player of interest, I've crossed all the sports, the number one player of interest to me, Ilya Mikheyev.
Wow, okay. And
yes. And I think this player is that important to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So you're not supposed to look at the other four yet, because okay. There's some good names on there.
Yeah.
I just think he is so important. They've got him penciled in to the top six right now. And he's played 39 games in the NHL. And then he suffered that wrist injury with the cut wrist and showed that he could be an impact player. And you know, I spoke about the bigs and how, you know, you fully expect that the Matthews, Nylander, Tavares, Marner grouping is going to come back and just be terrific. Mm-hmm. But where is their support going to come from? And or would they have the luxury of even playing Ilya on the third line? You know, and plugging one of the other guys up into that grouping. So I'm really excited to see him play. I think, you know, as this system calls for them to replenish that bottom grouping of players and always have players coming through because of the salaries dictated by the bigs, mm-hmm. He's going to be a critical player for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And not just this summer. potentially. You know, you think of the salary.
No, but we're going to get to see him, you know, and it's coming back under such unusual circumstances. You're coming back into a playoff mode, which he's never been in an NHL playoff before, but certainly a KHL veteran and a little bit older, 25 years old. And so looking at someone who, you know, you really, if he comes in and is really, really good, that could bode so well for this hockey club.
Okay.
I think he's that important. So from a player who's played 39 games, my number two, of course, is the ultimate veteran in Kyle Lowry. And just what Kyle Lowry did for the Raptors last year, what he's done his whole career, but now to have the swagger of a championship ring, he's down in that bubble right now, and he's walking around, and he's one of a few guys in the East, think about that, who's walking around with a championship ring.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got that swagger. And as much as this team, I love the resiliency of this team. I love what Nick Nurse has done with this team. And I just think they're a tough, scrappy group, but they've got the ring. And can he take it and lead this team, you know, to roll through once again, really strange circumstances, but I like what they've done by going to Florida as a group, by training down there. They got a little bit of a leg up on the rest of the teams going into that bubble. And I think he's going to be really, really important. Number three, because he had to be somewhere on my list, is Vladdy Jr. And this was before I knew they were going to take all the defensive pressure on him and just put him at first base. Now he's just going to be swinging away, Mark.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the hammer show every night. He's going to sit, and, you know, whether he's DHing or playing at first base, and just worry about being the hitter that he is showing, you know, the bat, the electric bat so far that could be just special. I had a hard time actually with the Jays because I wanted to pick a couple of them.
Sure.
And, you know, and really and show that. I went to my soccer expert on this one on TFC, and I had a few good choices there, but Piatti is it, the designated player that's coming in. And the sales job for me on him is that he is going to make others better. He looks to move the ball first. He's not a pure goal scorer, but looks to move the ball, seasoned veteran, and, you know, can make a lot of players better and can make goal scorers better. So, you know, Jozy Altidore has to be thrilled with the, you know, the ability to move the ball that he has. Now, I did rely on my secret.
Yeah, I was going to say,
soccer.
You sound way too smart right now.
I just, you know what, I've got a guy.
Okay.
I went to the guy.
Well,
and, or...
I was just going to say, on that note, Andy Petrillo returns next week for Leafs Lunch. I know that you'll join her. I hope that she is ready to talk hockey because, of course...
She will be, but she's immersed in that footy game,
yeah,
too, though.
Okay.
She's fully aware of that.
Okay.
And she might have been a guy that I talked to.
Right. And you'll have to talk to Michael Bradley about his new teammate as well.
Yeah, we'll see what he says about Pablo Piatti. And my last one is way, way, way out of left field, and that's Austin Martin. And the decision that the Jays have made, you know, when I've asked the last two baseball guys, why can't a 21-year-old play? Vladdy's 21. Bichette's 22. They've come up in a different manner. But, you know, and I thought Keegan put it well. The SEC, that's as big league as it gets in baseball. And, you know, I know that firsthand. I have a good friend very, very involved in the SEC and you know, follow that closely. And he's actually won a national championship, which, you know, Austin Martin did during his sophomore year at Vandy and really only played two full years because part of his third year was taken away with the pandemic. And so drafted, you know, number five overall, but I just look at the impact younger players are having on major sports, and they come in and they're so much more mature and so much more prepared. And think of a young Jordan Spieth coming in at 21 years old and, you know, winning majors and just not even blinking. And I actually was laughing at Spieth the other day because he talked about when he was young. You know, I just didn't really think about it and didn't focus too much, and just when he was young.
Yeah.
He's 26 now.
He's
all of 26 now. But I'd love to see this guy come in and join this bright, bright young group of players. And, you know, watching him be interviewed, he has a lot of swagger to me. He reminds me of Bichette a little bit when you see him interviewed. you know, the flow doesn't hurt, but
right.
more the attitude and the confidence he handles himself with. And let's face it, these young pros are just so much more prepared than I was by far, or that, you know, we were a generation ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago, coming into the majors. We didn't have the preparation levels that these guys have, and I'd love to see this player have an impact on the Toronto Blue Jays in a very short 60-game season.
And all week you've been so transparent about that, and it's made me think, because I think I can picture you as part of a baseball team, and in a way you're kind of playing the part of Brad Pitt in Moneyball, and you're in that room with all the scouts who have been in the game for years and years and years, and you're saying to this group, let's let him play. And that group's, of course, saying, whoa, okay, no. Like, he hasn't played in the minors, and he's just coming from college. That's not how we do things. And I can see you saying, well, let's make it the way we do things, right? And
well, you know what?
And you've brought that up a bunch of times. Why can't you come from, you know, an almost a pro-level college program, and you're a little bit older, you're not coming out of high school, why can't you step in there and play a couple innings and see how you do, especially when you have what everyone calls a major league bat?
I'll tell you what, yeah, I'd love to see it, mm-hmm. you know, and players have done it in the past, and I can't off the top of my head tell you exactly. I don't think Ken Griffey Jr. spent much time in the minors, for one.
No.
You know,
and John Older gets brought up a lot.
But he was at the University of Washington.
Yes.
Yeah, he was at the University of Washington, so he'd had some college experience. And, you know, that savvy. And once again, the kid's a winner. He won at Vanderbilt. And Vandy's a great school, too, like a really, really good academic institution. And so he's, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. And, hey, you asked me who I'd be excited to see in a Toronto uniform this summer. I'd be excited to see Austin.
I love it. You know, and I had him kind of in a larger group. I'm afraid he'll be stuck on that taxi squad and we'll never actually get to see him play a game. So he did not make my list. But if I start at number five, you kind of said his look-alike, and if he can become a similar player, man, it's great news for the Blue Jays. Bo Bichette, who timing's great because he hit a home run to the second deck last night in the inter-squad game. 285 batting average last season, 12 home runs. It just seems like nothing phases him, both on the field, but also his... I don't know if it's the fact that he has a father that played in the majors, but he handles himself so well with the media. He seems like a guy who wants to be the face of this franchise. And Vladdy's potential, his ceiling might be higher than Bo Bichette, but right now, you know, it's almost like Bo wants to make this his team. And he plays such an important position in the field as well that naturally, you know, you look at a captain playing shortstop, kind of like you looked at Derek Jeter. And I'm interested to see if he can take, you know, maybe another step, and he already had such a good rookie season. But Bo Bichette, 60 games, that's one of the reasons why, you know, people in the business say the Jays could be in there. They could be in the mix to make the playoffs. Number four, speaking of the playoffs, Austin Matthews. Let's call him a 50-goal scorer. He was going to reach that level. I think he was going to surpass Rick Vie for the most goals in a single season in Maple Leaf history. And remember the storylines going into the series against the Boston Bruins last year. How Austin Matthews wasn't good enough the year before and how he didn't produce and how they kind of shut him down. Five goals in that seven-game series. Again, kind of like with Bo Bichette, obviously he's further along in his career. Can he be an even more dominating player? And in that series against Columbus, a defensive-minded team, can the offense win out? And who's going to obviously lead the offense? It's going to be Austin Matthews along with Mitch Marner and William Nylander, but Austin Matthews is number four. Kyle Lowry at number three, a guy who has played his entire career with a chip on his shoulder. And Dave, how many people have said to him and the Raptors this season, you guys can't win without Kawhi? You know, and you'll make the playoffs, but like get out. Like you're not the Sixers, you're not the Celtics, you're not the Bucks. He has to be fueled by that, and I'm sure he has used the last 4 months to use that as motivation, and I can't wait to see what he can do in this kind of tournament style in Orlando. It'll be fun to watch. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at number two. I think we're all expecting big things from him. We were expecting things last year that maybe it was unfair to expect 30 home runs from a rookie. He had 15. Can he get the batting average up a little bit? But as you pointed out, and we made our list before the news came out, playing first base has to help him offensively and has to help him adjust to what life would be like as a major league player. And again, you know, you hope that he gets that opportunity this season because it means we have a season. And number one, the new superstar of the Toronto Raptors, Pascal Siakam, who could win most improved player again, going from 16.9 points per game last season. He was at 23.6 per game when the season was halted in mid-March. He had 19 points per game during the playoffs last year. Everyone looks at a potential series with the Boston Celtics in the second round. They obviously have to get to that point. And can Pascal Siakam be the best player in that series? It's so fun. He's so likable. But his style of play and everything, again, it's the theme, I guess, of my list is, can these young players reach the next level? And not all of them are going to do it, but it'll be fascinating to watch all of them. And
I'll tell you what's fun about the city of Toronto is those guys are guys that you slide up in your seat.
Yeah.
When they're at bat, when they're on the ice, when they're on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And you got guys that, you know, when Bichette comes to the plate, when Vladdy comes to the plate, you know, when I'm at a Jays game, I'm sliding up in my seat. Like, I'm totally paying attention to what's going on when they're at bat, and that's great for the city.
So that's our top five Toronto athletes we're excited to watch this summer. We won't be able to watch a former NL MVP play his season. Those details when we return, plus Michael Bradley and Ben Folks, MMA writer for The Athletic. Overdrive continuing here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive. I get up when I'm down, had enough, almost round.
Overdrive continuing with Mark Rowe and Dave Pullen. Big news out of baseball. Buster Posey, who has been the best catcher in baseball since breaking into the league in 2010, has announced that he is opting out of the season. And we should note that Posey and his wife are adopting identical twin girls. And the girls have been born prematurely. They are stable, which is the good news, but they'll be in hospital for some time. Dave, there's not a person on the planet that will question or be critical of this decision, but Buster Posey, probably the biggest name so far in baseball that has decided I'm not going to take part in the 2020 season.
And this one hit very close to home for me, Mark. And, you know, I've asked guys that I played both with and current guys today, was there a time in your career when you couldn't have reported? Like when basically whatever happened around you, you would feel like you couldn't leave your family at that exact moment. And when I saw the story about Buster Posey, you know, in 1986, I had identical twins born. Mm-hmm. And they were born in the 25th week, which is a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a medical miracle that they were saved. And they were born right at the start of October. So I immediately stepped back for a couple of weeks. I missed most of training camp that year with that, and it was a later starting season, and I just took some time and then went back to play, and it was a safe haven for me to play. But our early travel was all on the East Coast, and I basically, you know, had an airplane ready to go at any point as they went through different things. And when my twins were born, they were 2 pounds and 2 pounds 2 ounces. And jeez. So some of the, you know, mm-hmm. travails they went through, from heart stopping and bleeding on the brain and lungs collapsing. And, you know, as a player, you felt so helpless. You went to the hospital every single day right after practice. You played your games. But then on the road, with the proximity of where I played in Philadelphia and how close a lot of our games were early in the year in the Patrick Division, you were going, you know, an hour and a half to New York. And I didn't take a long road trip. You know, through that first 3.5 months. And there were times, one night in particular in Hartford, when I thought I was going to leave before the game started and fly home immediately. We had that, you know, at our disposal in order to get home for a medical situation. And so when I saw that about Buster Posey and his wife, now this is different in that they adopted identical twin females that were premature. And I don't know exactly how early or what issues they had. But at that point, for me to have checked out for 2 months maybe, or whatever the circumstances were, would have been really, really tough. Really tough. And I know leaving a young child at home and, you know, all the different things that come with that. You know, and I asked Carlo the same question, you know, with some of the things he's gone through at home with his little guy, if there were a time when he couldn't have left. And it's hard. It's really hard, and it's really personal. And when Buster Posey said that, you know, here's a guy who's also made $120 million. That's what he's made so far. And so he's walking away from the third of his $21 million salary this year. That's all aside, you know, from the fact that he's doing it for the right reasons.
And when you unfortunately have to run into those encounters as a professional athlete, you really cherish the franchise that you're with when they support you. And I'm sure that was your case with the Flyers.
Absolutely. Ed Snyder was unbelievable through that.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. Whatever I needed, I had.
Yeah. To go through that and not have the support of your organization, you'd be a mess as a player, and I'm sure you wouldn't even play. We're hoping TFC plays this weekend on Sunday against DC United. Michael Bradley, the team's captain, is going to join us at 6:05, plus Ben Foulkes, MMA writer for The Athletic, as Overdrive continues here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also up on TSN 4.